If you were to name some of the greatest novels of all time, I'm sure many of you would include Marcel Proust's novel In Search of Lost Time in it. The sheer length and the depth of this novel is quite astounding. And I would say it's not just a book, not just a novel, it's more of a therapy. In fact, I would suggest you to read Alain de Botton's book, How Proust Can Change Your Life, and which is a really interesting guide or a window to explore Proust's work. This may not work for some of the readers who are used to page turners. In fact, it's the opposite. Proust is somebody like James Joyce, who's going to spend a lot of time on the smallest of things and give you every detail of it. And the theme that you find in the book, such as that of time, that of memories, it can add so much value in terms of your own emotional struggles. And as I said, it is a therapy, in fact. So today, I won't tell you what the book is all about. I won't tell you what happens, because that's not really the point with Proust's work. The idea here is to uncover every layer, every page of the book, one by one, slowly, at your own pace. And then you will find how therapeutic this literature is. So in today's podcast, I'm going to narrate the initial few pages from the book. This is from the first volume, which is called The Way by Swans. In some translations, it is simply written as Swan's Way. So you can find that yourself. This is volume 1. And now I'll narrate, and you'll see how slowly the author uncovers every tiny detail and emotion of the protagonist. So here we go. For a long time, I went to bed early. Sometimes my candle scarcely out. My eyes would close so quickly that I did not have time to say to myself, "I am falling asleep." And half an hour later, the thought that it was time to try to sleep would wake me. I wanted to put down the book I thought I still had in my hands and blow out my light. I had not ceased while sleeping to form reflections on what I had just read. But these reflections had taken a rather peculiar turn. It seemed to me that I myself was what the book was talking about. A church, a quartet, the rivalry between Francis I and Charles V. This belief lived on for a few seconds after my waking. It did not shock my reason, but lay heavy like scales on my eyes and kept them from realizing that the candlestick was no longer lit. Then, it began to grow unintelligible to me, as after metempsychosis do the thoughts of an earlier existence. The subject of the book detached itself from me. I was free to apply myself to it or not. Immediately, I recovered my sight, and I was amazed to find a darkness around me, soft and restful for my eyes. But perhaps even more so for my mind, to which it appeared a thing without cause, incomprehensible, a thing truly dark. I would ask myself what time it might be. I could hear the whistling of the trains which, remote or nearby, like the singing of a bird in a forest, plotting the distances, described to me the extent of the deserted countryside where the travellers hastens towards the nearest station. and the little road he is following will be engraved on his memory by the excitement he owes to new places, to unaccustomed activities, to the recent conversation, and the farewells under the unfamiliar lamp that follow him still through the silence of the night, to the imminent sweetness of his return. I would rest my cheeks tenderly against the lovely cheeks of the pillow, which, full and fresh, are like the cheeks of our childhood. I would strike a match to look at my watch. Nearly midnight. This is the hour when the sick man who has been obliged to go off on a journey and has had to sleep in an unfamiliar hotel, wakened by an attack, is cheered to see a ray of light under the door. How fortunate, it's already morning. In a moment, the servants will be up. He'll be able to ring. Someone will come to help him. The hope of being relieved gives him the courage to suffer. In fact, he thought he heard footsteps. The steps approach, then recede. And the ray of light that was under his door has disappeared. It is midnight. They have just turned off the gas. The last servant has gone, and he will have to suffer the whole night through without remedy. I would go back to sleep, and sometimes afterwards, woke only briefly for a moment, long enough to hear the organic creak of the woodwork, open my eyes and stare at the kaleidoscope of the darkness, savor in a momentary glimmer of consciousness the sleep into which were plunged the furniture, the room, that whole of which I was only a small part and whose insensibility I would soon return to share. Or else, while sleeping, I had effortlessly returned to a forever vanished period of my early life, rediscovered one of my childish terrors, such as that my great uncle would pull me by my curls, a terror dispelled on the day, the dawn for me of a new era, when they were cut off. I had forgotten that event during my sleep. I recovered its memory as soon as I managed to wake myself up to escape the hands of my great uncle. But as a precautionary measure, I would completely surround my head with my pillow before returning to the world of dreams. Sometimes, as Eve was born from one of Adam's ribs, a woman was born during my sleep from a cramped position of my thigh. Formed of the pleasure I was on the point of enjoying, she, I imagined, was the only offering it to me. My body, which felt in hers my own warmth, tried to return to itself inside her. I woke up. The rest of humanity seemed very remote compared with this woman I had left scarcely a few moments before. My cheek was still warm from her kiss, my body aching from the weight of hers. If, as sometimes happened, she had the features of a woman I had known in life, I would devote myself entirely to this end, to finding her again, like those who go off on a journey to see a longed-for city with their own eyes and imagine that one can enjoy in reality the charm of a dream. Little by little, the memory of her would fade. I had forgotten the girl of my dream.